It's the opening day for the Connecticut General Assembly, and there's a lot of work to be done. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Coming up, we're going to hear from two state senators, both sides of the aisle, see how they're going to approach different topics, different issues. But to give us a background as to what will be taking place in Hartford over the next few months, we call on WSHU's Ebong Udama. He's been covering the Connecticut State Legislature for, Ebong, is it what, close to two decades now? I'm not. I don't want to date you, but I think it's close to that. You've been around
2001.
Since 2001. Well, congratulations on the longevity.
I should congratulate our new governor. He's just been sworn in as the 89th governor just a few moments ago. So good timing on your part.
And did he say anything before or after to members of the media?
He's actually speaking right now.
What is the
He says basically that he's happy to be in the arena, and he's joined by his family, and he thanked his family. He said they're in the journey together, and it's a journey that they're taking together with all the people of Connecticut. And that's how he feels about the state, that we're all in this together.
Well, there's one thing that we can say about Ned Lamont is that he's not a quitter. This was his third try at public office, and he wasn't going to give up, was he?
No, as a matter of fact, that's what the pastor of the Round Hill Congregational Church in Greenwich, his pastor who gave some comments before Lamont was sworn in, that's what he said. He said that even in tennis, he's not a quitter. So that's basically, he's got determination, and that was the basic message of his pastor, the Dr. Reverend Ralph Alberg of the Round Hill Congregational Church. And he was sworn in by an old friend, the former Chief Justice of Connecticut, Chase Rogers, who happened to have gone to college with Ned Lamont's wife, Annie. And she introduced Chase Rogers, who then administered the oath of office to Ned Lamont.
Ebong, how would you describe the mood at the state capitol in terms of everything that needs to be done in the billboard, as we call it, what takes place before the program? I ran down a list of all the issues that the legislators have to deal with over the next few months. It is an impressive list, and so many important issues. Do they feel optimistic that they can get all of this done?
I think they're in a pretty happy mood right now. They haven't really sat down to start working, although some legislation has already been introduced, especially to deal with the online gambling. They've introduced legislation, bipartisan legislation on that, you went through a whole list of things like the legalization of recreational use of marijuana and tolls on the highways. And the Democratic agenda also includes paid family and medical leave and increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And that's, you know, the main problem is going to be the budget. And it seems as if Lamont is going to be presenting his first budget to the legislature sometime mid to late February. Normally it would be the first Wednesday in October that he would be giving his budget. He'd be making his budget presentation, but it seems it might be put off a couple of weeks to give him time to put together his budget.
What kind of feeling are you getting from the Republican side of the aisle? Are they ready to work with the Democrats, who are now firmly in control of both houses in the General Assembly and also, obviously, the governor?
Well, the thing is that they feel that, you know, that the Democrats have been fiscally irresponsible, that they come up with these programs that need funding without saying how they're going to fund them, and then turn around and ask for higher taxes, and they're very concerned about that. So even though they have a smaller minority, they say they're going to make sure that their voices are heard as these pieces of legislation make it through the legislature.
I'm guessing that for the Republicans, just like for the Democrats, we spoke with Themis Claridis last week, and I guess the most important issue is, as she put it, the budget, the budget, the budget.
Yes, that's what they seem to be. That seems to be their focus. They're very focused on the budget. But actually, we do have, the state is expecting a surplus this year. But we are looking at deficits into the billions of dollars in the next couple of years and into the future, unless some structural changes are made to how the state finances its budget.
As you and I were speaking last week on the air, many of the proposals by the Democrats, when people hear them, they say, well, this sounds good. Let's raise the minimum wage. Let's have paid family medical leave. Let's do the right things, more money for schools and so on. And then the Republicans and some fiscal experts turn around and they say, all of this sounds great. Where's the money coming from?
That's the question. And that is going to be answered. You know, a lot of this stuff doesn't get done until almost the end of the session. And this, the Connecticut legislature has 2-year terms. So the first and our budget is a biannual budget. So the first year of the budget is where the real heavy lifting is done. And that's what's going to happen in this session. And it's a longer session than we have. First year of the 2-year term is a longer session. And then we have a shorter and a session for the second year. And normally what happens is they have heavy lifting is done the first year, and then adjustments are made to the budget in the second year.
There are always surprises that come out of the sessions, things that we never even thought about. Is there anything that you see coming up on the horizon, a story that is maybe being a little bit buried nowadays, or all the things that we're talking about pretty much where it's going to stay for the next few months?
Well, that's the way I see it. I mean, but, you know, there's the people who always come up like this, someone that keeps introducing legislation to change the time so that we don't turn back the clocks in Connecticut anymore.
The daylight savings time proposal, yes.
Daylight savings, yes. That always comes up and it never goes anywhere. So things like that will probably happen again this year.
Tell me a little
but
bit.
Generally, go ahead.
I was just going to say, tell me a little bit about the rest of the festivities going on today. What's the schedule?
Well, Ned Lamont has just finished his speech after being sworn in. And then we're going to have a 19-gun salute. So this place is going to be, it's going to be pretty noisy in a few minutes. And right after that, there'll be a parade from the State Armory up Capitol Avenue onto Trinity Street. And then the National Guard will be doing a flyover with the C-130s, and that will be right after the parade.
Just out of curiosity, is former Governor Dan Malloy there?
Absolutely. There are three former governors in attendance. There's Lowell Weicker, there's Jody Rell, and, of course, Donald Malloy.
And has former Governor Malloy said anything today? I know that he's been talking a lot to the press over the last few weeks about his legacy and his accomplishments.
Well, not today. Today is Lamont's day. But I did see him earlier And I was trying to get ready to come talk to you, so I didn't have a chance to speak with him at the time.
We're taking you away from important work. Just one more minute, if we can. What do you think will be, besides the budget, the first item after the budget and the deficit that the Democrats will really work on right away?
I think the very first thing will be the online gambling legislation. I think there's bipartisan support for doing something immediately on that. So I think that will be done pretty rapidly. The others might take a while, especially tolls. I don't see that. There were people demonstrating outside the Capitol today who were demonstrating against reintroducing tolls in Connecticut. So there's going to be a fight on that one.
WSHU's Ebong Udama. He has been covering the Connecticut State Legislature since 2001, and he'll be there a lot over the next few months. He'll be cruising back and forth up I-91. Ebong, thank you.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Ron.
Let's continue with our discussion about today's opening session of the Connecticut General Assembly. We're going to hear from the Democratic side of the aisle, and for that, we turn to Alex Bergstein. The new senator represents the 36th District, which is Greenwich and parts of Stamford and New Canaan. Senator, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Ron, for having me. I'm excited to be on.
House GOP leader Themis Claridis was with us last week, and she said the top three issues are the budget, the budget, the budget. Is she right?
You know what? I actually agree with her. We can't move forward without balancing our budget. So that isn't a top priority. The question really becomes, how do we do that? And what mechanisms do we employ to grow the economy in addition to harnessing efficiency and innovation and technology to reduce our expenses? So I agree in principle. The question is, what are the details?
Connecticut has been described as being in a fiscal crisis. All throughout the gubernatorial campaign, we heard both sides saying the budget fiscal crisis. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, it is an accurate description. The problem is that many people end the conversation there. They just keep going on a loop about how bad things are, how bad things are, and how bad things are. And then when you have that mentality of everything's bad and everything's getting worse, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I would like to ban negativity altogether. I find it completely an unproductive use of time. Focus on the facts instead, and then harness our energy and channel it towards working on solutions, because there are good solutions out there, and we can use our time and our talent much better if we talk about how to implement solutions than just talking in a listening to negativity on the loop. That is just that should not be tolerated anymore. We don't have time for negativity.
All right, let's get down to brass tacks then. Is the budget going to have to be cut? Will taxes need to be raised?
Nope, taxes do not need to be raised. We have other alternatives we can employ to drive new revenue. I'm in favor of tolls, electronic tolls. It is the unlocked potential is enormous. We could have not only $1 billion in tolls, mostly from out-of-state drivers, but if we had electronic tolls, we could use that income stream, we could securitize it with private sector financing and actually unlock $8 to $10 billion to invest in infrastructure improvements, bringing our train time down, like Stanford to New York could be a 30-minute train time, which would be a total game changer for our economy. Companies and people would move to Stanford, Lower Fairfield County. Other people from other parts of the state could get to work if they worked in Stanford or that area much faster. If we had 30 minutes from New Haven to Stanford and 30 minutes from Stanford to New York. And this is not a pie-in-the-sky idea. It's entirely feasible, and the plans are virtually ready to go. We just need the financing, and we have the opportunity if we install tolls.
Can we expand on the toll issue just a little bit? Where would the tolls be?
Well, nothing has been decided or set in stone. There have been various projections. I personally am in favor of putting tolls on 95 and on 91 and 84, not necessarily on the merit, because trucks don't pass on the merit, and trucks would be the big revenue driver. So with electronic tolls, just to clarify any myths, there, it is not a one-price-fits-all scheme. We have technology now that we can use for differential pricing. So trucks, out-of-state trucks, would pay a lot more than anybody else. It would be a huge source of revenue. In-state cars would pay much less than everybody else. And we could even do something where you would have a toll-free zone maybe within 5 or 10 miles of your house, so that for your daily activities, you wouldn't be charged at all. We could exempt low-income families. We could do credits for commuters. We could do all sorts of things, congestion pricing to put a premium on high traffic times, all sorts of things to not only mitigate traffic but to optimize revenue.
Let's switch topics just a little bit. One of the issues that will be taken up by the General Assembly is recreational marijuana, legalizing it possibly. Are you in favor of that?
I am not in favor. I am opposed to legalizing recreational marijuana. And just to clarify so that people understand, medical marijuana is already legal in Connecticut. There are, I believe, 3 dispensaries with 9 new ones that just opened up. So for those people who do have recognized conditions, are in chronic pain, and are using marijuana medicinally, it is available. For those who want to use it recreationally, it has been decriminalized in the sense that possession of a very small amount, I think it's a half an ounce, is no longer criminal. So that alleviated a big problem. But for those who want to deal in marijuana or use it more often recreationally, it still is illegal. And I think that's appropriate because there are many, many costs embedded in legalizing what we know is a mind-altering substance. And I'm especially concerned about the health impacts and the impacts on cognitive development of children. And there's plenty of scientific evidence showing that exposure before the brain is fully developed, and the brain isn't fully developed until 25, actually reduces IQ, causes young people to perform worse in school, and changes the trajectory of their lives, perhaps, so they don't necessarily fulfill their intellectual and professional potential. And that's just those sorts of costs can't really be calculated, but those are prices that I am not willing to pay for what is actually a very modest source of revenue. And there's another factor, too, which is public safety. And I've been in Colorado and seen been on the roads with other drivers who are high, and it's terrifying. So the data is just coming back from states like Colorado that legalized it a few years ago, and the numbers are scary. There are definitely more fatalities. There's more of a cost associated with legalizing it than I think people anticipated.
You live down in Greenwich, and I'm just going to talk about Fairfield County now because it's on the border with New York. New York appears, at least Governor Cuomo is talking about it, that they will be going and passing marijuana laws to legalize it there. What's to prevent those who live in Stamford, Norwalk, Greenwich, and so on from simply crossing over into Port Chester, going to White Plains and so on, and then buying marijuana there?
Nothing prevents them, just like nothing prevents them from going to New York and buying a Tesla, because they can't buy a Tesla in the state of Connecticut. That we have free trade among our states. So there's no prohibition on doing that. But possession, if they bring it back to Connecticut and it's over half an ounce, I think is the legal limit, that possession would still be illegal here in Connecticut.
But maybe I wasn't explaining myself properly. If Massachusetts legalizes it, if New York legalizes it, won't Connecticut just be there in the middle saying, and look kind of strange, and the people here who like to smoke or to use marijuana would simply say, this is crazy, you're just making us drive to Massachusetts and New York State.
I'm okay with that sort of, if that's the backlash, that's slightly inconvenient because they have to drive farther to get it. I am totally okay with that. What I'm not okay with is normalizing a use of a drug that impairs the brain development of young people, and that is addictive, and that has all sorts of other consequences to health and public safety. That is a price that I'm not willing to pay.
Let's move on to something that you are very familiar with. You have written some articles about it. You've even taken a little bit of heat over it. How to fix the unfunded pension liability. You have called for structural reforms. And I don't know if you had a chance to see it. Chris Powell in the Journal Inquirer wrote, if she knows what's good for her, Bergstein will drop the pension reform stuff. Did you see that article and that comment?
Well, it was not really an article. It was an opinion piece by someone who I have never met, who has never spoken to me. It was, let's just say, ill-informed and certainly a very biased piece. So I did see it, but I don't give it any credence whatsoever. Look, the fact of the matter is we do need structural change. We do need my objective. Let me just be clear. My objective is to have a pension system that is fully funded, because that is the only way that retirees can be secure in the knowledge that their pensions will be funded. So that's the objective. We have real numbers to work with. And once we all sit down, which we're actually doing this Friday, sit down and hear from the experts, from the controller's office and other experts, what the real numbers are, it will become clear that we have to make a major adjustment in the near term. This cannot be postponed. This cannot be kicked down the road anymore. And look, I'm willing to have that tough conversation, and it is a tough conversation. But I think I was the only candidate during the campaign that was willing to have a tough conversation. And people can talk about other things like, you know, moving the income stream from the lottery, from the general fund to the pension fund, but that's just shifting money from one bucket to another bucket. It's not a Band-Aid fix, but it's not a complete fix. And I just actually spoke with Jonathan Steinberg yesterday, who chaired the Pension Sustainability Commission, and he fully agreed. He said all the things that have been discussed, the lottery, the state assets, those are at best Band-Aids. They are not long-term or even comprehensive solutions.
You are listening to The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak, and we're talking with Alex Bergstein, the new senator who represents the 36th District. We're running down a number of the different issues that the new legislative session will be dealing with starting today, which is Wednesday, going all the way through June. Let's move on to the next one, which is raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Are you in favor of that?
I am in favor. In fact, I will be co-introducing that legislation with many of my Democratic colleagues. I'm in favor because it makes economic sense. So when you look at the, and I know there are going to be lobbyists for small businesses that are up in arms about it and grumble about it. But the fact of the matter is there are other things we can do to benefit small businesses and alleviate the pain of this. But most businesses already pay a minimum wage, and the benefit of a minimum wage is that, for those companies that don't pay it, is that it will pull 50% of women in Connecticut now living in poverty, will pull them out of poverty. What that means is that they will be able to care for themselves, they'll be able to care for their children, they'll be able to contribute to their local economies, to contribute to their communities, they will become self-sufficient, and so will their families. And that alleviates a tremendous amount of pressure on the social support system. So it really is a win-win for us as a tax-paying society, as well as for the individuals. And we have to look at everything that way. I don't look at an issue just through a single lens. I look at it holistically. What will the effect be for the entire ecosystem? Because, as you know, my belief is that we are not just individuals, you know, coexisting next to one another. We are actually an ecosystem, and we depend on one another for survival. So we have to think of everything as a community.
Are you in favor of paid family leave for medical and health reasons?
I absolutely am. And in fact, I started a nonprofit 3 years ago to focus on this issue because, again, it's all in how the issue is framed. And unfortunately, up until now, the paid family medical leave issue has been framed by opponents as a loss for business, that somehow this is a giveaway to employees, and a loss for the business community. And in fact, the data does not support that. The data shows exactly the opposite, that, and this is data done by McKinsey, published many times over the last 2 years, they have proven that paid family medical leave as a policy actually benefits businesses. Businesses perform better because they have less turnover, they have higher morale, they have greater loyalty, greater productivity by their employees. It actually improves business performance. So it's, again, it's a win-win policy that just needs to be framed in the right way with accurate data so that people understand.
If I can squeeze in two more quick questions. Are you in favor of the new gun laws being proposed?
I haven't seen, I don't know exactly which gun laws you're referring to, but I can tell you that I am a strong advocate of gun safety, and I have been for many years, and I will continue to be, and I'm very excited to be the vice chair of the Judiciary Committee, because that is the committee that all of the gun bills will come through, and I have a number of them that I'm going to be introducing or co-introducing with my colleagues if they're in agreement. And, you can expect to see a lot of activity on that front.
Well, one of those I know being talked about is Ethan's Law. The other has to do with ghost guns.
Yeah.
Guns that can't be traced and so on.
Yeah.
Should there be new laws restricting vaping?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I'm putting together one right now. And I've already drafted it. And so this is a result of many conversations that I've had with local nonprofits who work within the community, who work within the schools. I've talked to superintendents of all three school districts that I represent to really understand and assess the problem before making any sort of recommendations. But yes, I am drafting a bill that would increase raise the legal age to 21, and impose all sorts of other costs to sellers of e-cigarettes that violate the law and that sell to minors, and a number of other things. So we can do better in that regard. Vaping is epidemic for anyone who doesn't have a teenager. You might not realize it, but vaping was introduced. E-cigarettes were introduced as an alternative to cigarettes to get people off of cigarettes. And they actually have been successful in getting people off of cigarettes. But unfortunately, they've created an entirely new problem, which is a young generation of kids who are addicted to vaping, because the e-cigarettes that are being sold now are not like traditional cigarettes. They are flavored with all sorts of tantalizing flavors. And kids don't even realize that how much nicotine they are inhaling. And before they know it, they are addicted. And I know this because I've spoken to kids in high school who have told me their personal stories. And they honestly didn't even know what they were doing, what the consequences were. And before they knew it, they were addicted. And they had to vape every hour to maintain their sense of equilibrium. And that's the public health crisis that we need to address.
Senator, we're out of time. Senator Alex Bergstein, okay, who represents the 36th District. Senator, thank you, and we'll check in with you in the next month or so, and we'll find out how things are going in Hartford.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Ron. Take care.
In just a moment, we're going to hear from the Republican side of the aisle, and we're going to speak with State Senator Tony Huang. But first, before we speak with the senator, we want to play for you a short bit of the speech that the new governor, Ned Lamont, gave just a short time ago.
For generations, Connecticut was the most entrepreneurial, inventive, and fast-growing state, located with amazing opportunities, and we still can be. But I will not allow our next 4 years to be defined by a fiscal crisis. Together, We're going to craft an honestly balanced budget, which does not borrow from the future, but invests in the future. We owe our kids, our extended family, nothing less.
Connecticut's new governor, Ned Lamont. Tony Huang has been patiently waiting on the phone. He is the senator from the 28th District. The 28th District is Fairfield, Westport, Weston, Easton, and Newtown, Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Senator Huang, how are you, sir?
I'm wonderful, Ron. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for being with us. What did you think about Governor Lamont's speech?
I think with every new administration, there is optimism and promise. I still remember 8 years ago when ex-Governor Malloy promoted the vision of promise and shared sacrifice, but reality is a lot harder. And unfortunately, the climate has not changed. And in fact, I think the struggle is even more difficult. So I'm optimistic. I'm excited. But I, at the same time, realize there's incredible hard work ahead of us. So I'm encouraged. I'm optimistic. And I'm looking forward to getting to work.
It appears that both sides of the aisle can agree that the one thing that must be done right away is to take care of the money, the state's fiscal mess. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And you know, we only can use Governor Malloy's history as a precursor and anxiously wait for Lamont's presentation. He will address the body, a joint session at 2:30 today, and he'll present his budget in mid-February. But people need to remember, Governor Malloy, in his first year, raised one of the highest tax increases in the history of the state. And that, unfortunately, was still not enough. And then his second budget had high tax increases, and it wasn't enough. So raising taxes and looking at revenue may not be the solution that the state of Connecticut needs. It needs to understand that we spend beyond our means. Our liabilities exceed our revenue intake. We should not and cannot talk about incredible programs that are beneficial to so many valuable people when we're at the same time can't even meet the obligations of government itself.
If I understand you correctly, are you saying that the budget state programs need to be cut? It must be slashed to save money?
Absolutely not. I think we didn't even have enough money, Ron, to take care of the most important programs, those that are most at risk, most vulnerable, developmental disabilities, our seniors, our veterans. Absolutely not. We cut educational funding. No, I say that we have to reevaluate government and taking a look at what is essential and critical services, fund them fully, and make the shared sacrifices that we need to do. And if we need money, I'm open to every point of discussions. But without a doubt, the budgets that we've had in the number of years up until the last two bipartisan legislative budgets have really hurt the most vulnerable at risk. So no, it's not about devastating programs, because there are great programs out there that are essential to the community. But without taking the necessary prioritizations of those, it is those that are most at risk and vulnerable that get hurt. I am absolutely for funding and taking care of those that are most at risk and vulnerable, our education, our infrastructure. But certainly, let's do it in a prioritization manner that makes sure that we spend money the right way.
All right. You say that you're open to most proposals. You'll be willing to look at anything at this point. So let's run them down if we can. Legalizing recreational marijuana, because it's legal in Massachusetts now, and obviously New York is going to make a big push for it. Governor Cuomo says that he is in favor of it. There are those who they don't like the idea. They believe it's addictive. It's bad for our youth. But there are others who say, look, if Massachusetts is going to do it, if New York's going to do it, Connecticut needs to do it, too, because we need the money. Let's not have our people go to these other states and buy the marijuana there, and we're losing the revenue. Would you be in favor of legalizing recreational marijuana in Connecticut?
I think it is absolutely a open topic of conversation. And I think for the first time in the history of this debate, we will have a real dialogue about implementation of it. So with that said, in the past, it's always been kind of a confrontational, up at 10,000 feet, you're for, you're against it, and the idea of real dialogue doesn't exist. We have now a majority in both the Senate and the House that favors that, I believe. You've got a governor that is open and receptive to it. So I think we're going to have a real thoughtful and productive conversation in regards to a public health policy. Isn't it fascinating, Ron, that when we talk about marijuana and recreational legalization, it has always been about the other states doing it, the money aspect of revenue. We've never had a dialogue where the public health component has been brought into a dialogue. Isn't that interesting? We've never had the Commissioner of Public Health offer his or her input. The second component that we've not done is we have an opportunity now to look at Colorado and states that have implemented recreational marijuana and have now anecdotal data that says some of the aspects in regards to safety, in regards to traffic safety and driving safety and the ability for the state and you know, first responders to be able to handle some of the aspects of, you know, the drug's influence like we do with alcohol. So I am absolutely open to that conversation, but we need to look at it from a public health sector. We need to look at it from a public safety sector, as well as what it does on a revenue basis and independent choice. So absolutely, Ron, I look at it on, I'm very open to that conversation. But I think the third thing we need to consider is the fact that even if we legalize recreational marijuana, it's still on the federal legislation a felony if you are in possession in various other states. So that is a catch-22 that we have to be very sensitive to as well.
I invite you to listen to our program coming up on Tuesday, January 22nd. We're going to be doing a full program on whether or not it should be legalized here in Connecticut and also in New York. And I am going to have guests who are both pro and cons, so, and from the health aspects, not just from the money. So I hope that you can listen at that time. Senator, tolls on the roads to raise revenue. Obviously, the roads need fixing. The bridges need fixing. Are you in favor of electronic tolling?
Well, I think your first two points are absolutely critical. And isn't it fascinating that it is always a precursor to tolls, of saying our roads and our transit are in disrepair? But I offer to you, Ron, that we've had administrations leaving from O'Neill to Rowland to Rell, and there was always the frustration that we did not do enough for our roads. We did not do enough for our rails. And now we say we don't have enough money and we need tolls because we need to do more for our rails. We need to do more for our roads. We do. And I am absolutely committed that we have to make significant infrastructure improvements to our roads and rails and all aspects of our infrastructure. But that being said, we want to make sure that the revenue that we get already is properly applied to it. So I'm open to that conversation. We collect significant revenue. In fact, we are one of the highest, if not the highest, gasoline tax in this country. So we need to look at all aspects of revenue and that we collect in the state of Connecticut, and where are we spending the money? So it goes back to a prioritization of our priorities. But to answer the second question, yes, tolling is it's all around us, and the technology has improved so much from the tolls that we see in the past. The overhead collections, the electronics. So it's an opportunity for us to see that has a opportunity to maybe control congestion pricing, to ease burden on roads and change traffic patterns. So I am open to that conversation again. But just as we talk about marijuana, if you're just driving it because it's a revenue enhancement, we're not taking the issue of, look, it has always been a priority.
So
if
I can understand it properly, what you're basically saying is you're keeping an open mind on legalizing recreational marijuana, keeping an open mind on tolls on the roads, but you haven't decided yet whether yes or no.
That is absolutely correct. And I would encourage all of my legislators as we begin this session that we have a responsibility to look at all the information, look at and evaluate all the relevant facts. If we go into it with our minds closed, we're not going to be able to listen to some of the valuable things that could make a good policy even better. So absolutely, I think you phrased it beautifully, Ron. I'm open. I mean, there are concerns for me. But that being said, I am absolutely open to the conversation.
State Senator Tony Huang is with us. He represents the 28th District in Connecticut. Senator, should the minimum wage be raised to $15 an hour?
You know, it's a fascinating conversation, and I listened to the new senator from Greenwich, Senator Bergstein. She brings up some very positive points, and she brings different thought processes to it. But what I am also looking for, just as we did with marijuana, just as we did with tolling, you need to take a look at the consequential impact of what raising the minimum wage does in a real-life marketplace. So I look at New York City raising the service minimum wage. That's important because $15 an hour is still not a livable wage anywhere in southwestern Connecticut. That being said, when they imposed the $15 minimum wage for the service sector in New York, I remember about 6 months later, I flew out of JFK Airport and I went to a restaurant and I could not find a single server. What they did and business did was they went entirely to a compilation of kiosks and iPads to take orders. And what happened to all of those employees? They were displaced by technology. What we are looking at is changes in the dynamic of the minimum wage would also impact our municipalities, our nonprofits, and opportunities for entry employment for young people to get a first job. You would impact businesses' ability to be able to plan accordingly. So, again, first question, second question, the third question, I'm going to keep an open mind on this, but we need to understand the marketplace and not just simply a hypothetical and a feel good. I would love to have that happen, Ron. I would love to be able to give everybody a livable wage, but we need to understand that there are marketplaces and that there are technology dynamics that if we raise it out of the specter of an ability of businesses to pay, businesses might leave our state, businesses might adapt their business models that will really inversely impact the very employees that we're trying to help and support. So again, I'm absolutely open to the conversation. I support the idea of giving every individual in our state an opportunity to earn a living, to be able to participate in pursuing the American dream. But we need to understand ideas don't always mesh in the real place marketplace. And we need to make policy that reflects the real marketplace and its consequential impact.
Senator,
that's an important conversation.
We have 4 minutes left. I'm going to kind of do rapid-fire questions for you, see if I can get some answers here on a few of these. Paid family leave for medical and health reasons. Yes
well,
or no?
I supported it. How are we going to fund it?
Okay. Vaping. You probably heard Senator Bergstein talking about that new laws restricting vaping, specifically targeting our youth, the teens. Should there be new laws aimed specifically at that?
Absolutely.
And so any ideas about how much it should work? Should it be 21 years old?
Well, I think when you raise the age consideration, you bring a whole host of civil liberties and personal decision-making dynamics. But I think more than anything, what we can have as a public policy discussion is where and how they're marketing this product. I remember back when we were very outraged with the Joe Camel advertising cartoon figure that were appealing and catering to a younger population in the smoking. I believe that the vaping methodology has really taken that kind of a marketing scheme, and I would be very anxious to take a look at some of that policy and how they're getting into our schools, impacting our younger children, and allowing them to freely buy that in the marketplace.
There are new proposals for gun law proposals going on in Connecticut in the General Assembly. I'm thinking of specifically Ethan's Law, those aimed at ghost guns. What are your thoughts on those?
Well, I think the fact that ghost guns are allowed in the marketplace is unacceptable. I actually last year co-sponsored the banning of ghost guns, the banning of and the considerations in addressing the 3D printing guns. The third thing I was very concerned about is the fact that, and I'm glad that we banned bump stocks. But the other concern is on a federal level, the reciprocity of gun ownership and permit rights from other states coming into our state. Connecticut has one of the strictest gun laws in the country. And I'm happy to say that I was one of the legislators that voted for that. And at the same time, it's an incredible honor and privilege for me to represent Newtown. It's something that's near and dear to me. And the town has been a big part of my legislative career. And I'm just really honored to be able to represent the people of that great town.
Senator, we have 45 seconds left. What do you want to see at the end of this session? How do you want it to turn out? I know it's such a broad question, but is there anything that you think about before you fall asleep and say, look, at the end of this, come June, July, I hope we're at this point?
Well, I hope we have a budget that is resolved before our municipal budgets, and we give them some stability and structure. We allocate and create a structural foundation for our budget process, which impacts every aspect of our lives. I hope we do a better job in creating a predictable, sustainable budget structure moving forward. And I hope that all of us have an open mind. As I honestly shared with you, I'm going to look at everything and I'm going to evaluate. At the end of the day, we have to create policy that reflects the will of the people of our state and know that the laws that we make will impact how they live.
State Senator Tony Huang, who represents the 28th District in Connecticut, Fairfield, Westport, Weston, Easton, and Newtown, Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Senator, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
Happy New Year, and speak with you soon. That'll do it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Ann Lopez, the producer. And Cherry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.